Britain was one of the leaders of the slave trade, profiting from buying and selling slaves in multiple countries. When the British government banned it in the 1830s, the owners, not the slaves, were compensated. Descendants of the owners and other people connected to the trade were beneficiaries of both the trade itself and the compensation, and some of them came to Australia, bringing their slave-owning beliefs to positions of influence. The historian Georgina Arnott is part of an Australian Research Council-funded project looking at how the long tentacles of slavery reached Australia. Georgina is a postdoctoral research associate at Melbourne University, and it was good to meet her.
Hello, and lovely to speak with you.
There's been renewed interest, Georgina, in Britain's slavery history, largely due to people like, I suppose, the dreadful story of George Floyd and then the aftermath of that. And a huge database project in particular in London is formalising all this. Can you tell us about it, please?
Yeah, well, I think the interest among historians in slavery, British involvement in slavery and its impact on the British Empire goes back some decades. So it's not, although there's clear links with the Black Lives Matter movement, it preceded that. And they're really asking the question, including myself, how significant was slave business and anti-slavery movements as well to Britain and its empire, including in the aftermath of transatlantic slavery.
And it's prompted, hasn't it, all sorts of new renewed interest in family histories and on sort of intergenerational inheritance. And that's been an interesting angle to it.
Absolutely. The University College of London, project by a group of historians, launched a database in 2014 which is freely available, and it's called, on the internet, it's called The Legacies of British Slavery. It lists slave owners in the British Empire and the compensation they received at the time of abolition. So it is possible to go to that, anyone could go to that website and type in a 19th century British surname and possibly find a link to British slavery, and many historians have done that. And so that's opened up, you know, quite interesting new avenues of exploration.
Very interesting. And would you mind doing a little recap for us, please? How extensive was Britain's involvement in the slave trade?
Well, after Portugal, Britain was the largest carrier of slaves from Africa, West Africa, to the slave colonies. Transatlantic slavery, that institution, went for almost four centuries and involved, as I say, Portugal, Britain, Spain, France, principally. And British ships would typically move in a triangular route, leaving from the major ports, London, Liverpool and Bristol, for example, moving southwards to Africa, often with exported British goods,
right,
where they would sell them in Africa and they would be replaced with enslaved people who would then be taken across the Atlantic to the slave colonies of Brazil, the Caribbean and Central America, and then again replaced with goods that were often slave produced and go back up to Britain where they were sold there.
In fact, we've just had, interestingly, a couple of listeners have said Britain was a latecomer to slavery. The Egyptians had Jewish slaves, Romans had Greek slaves, Muslims had Christian slaves. Only the British stopped it. And there's other examples like that, particularly the slavery in Asian regions. You wouldn't rebut that, I don't suppose.
Absolutely not. And the thing that's particular about transatlantic slavery was that it was on a scale and institutionalised in a number of countries that had technologies to make it on a scale that was larger than anything that had happened before. And so we're talking about 12.5 million enslaved people, roughly, that were taken from Africa, forcibly taken and removed to across to the Atlantic.
Which actually did have an enormous upheaval, didn't it? It caused an enormous social upheaval in Africa. That's another byproduct of this research.
Yeah, absolutely. And societies, as we can all well imagine, were really torn apart by people, particularly in the most productive period of their lives, often taken out of those societies. And then, of course, in the slave colonies, the intergenerational trauma that resulted from the people who had lived as enslaved people. And then, of course, it's also worth remembering that in many periods of the transatlantic slave time, roughly one in five people did not make it across the Atlantic. So bad were the conditions on those ships.
Oh, yes. And slaves weren't used in Britain, though, were they?
They weren't used in Britain itself, and that's often, I guess, why there's this... there has been a sense that Britain's involvement was fairly minor. Britain really benefited from slavery by being the carrier of slaves, and that was an enormous business. And then, of course, there was a whole lot of related businesses that emerged from that, manufacturing, transport, maritime. And then, of course, there were Britain's slave colonies in the Caribbean, which were enormously wealth-producing.
Well, now to the compensation, which is what I suspect will come as a shock to many listeners, that it did to us. Tell us, please, about it and then the impact on Australia.
When slavery was finally abolished in the British Empire in 1833, the British Parliament decided to compensate the slave owners. And they did this with a loan, a private loan of £20 million in the money of that time. So that represented about 40% of GDP for that year, which was then disbursed among slave owners in a very complex process. So slave owners would apply for compensation to administration in London, and then many of the claims were contested and some over several years, and then people were compensated for the amount of people that they had enslaved and the productivity of those plantations.
Yeah, and look, there'd been calls for abolition in Britain since the late 18th century, and interestingly in Australia, despite our first European residents being effectively white slaves, or perhaps because of it, that anti-slavery movement became quite strong here, didn't it?
It was, and that's something that's really interesting and important to remember, that the Australian colonies were established at a time when British humanitarianism was on the rise and anti-slavery abolition movements were then very powerful around the same time that the Australian colonies were established. So many colonists actually felt very proud that, as they saw it, there was no institutionalised slavery in the Australian colonies. We might dispute that today.
Because we haven't got a lot of time left, I'd like to go to some of the beneficiaries of that compensation and of slave ownership itself, which made its way to Australia. The ARC project you're working on is focusing on WA to begin with. Would you introduce us, please, and I was really shocked to read this, to the first Chief Justice of WA, Archibald Burt, progeny from a man called Archibald Burt.
Yes, he was the first Chief Justice of Western Australia. He came over to the Swan River Colony, as it was known then, in 1861. He came from St Kitts in the Caribbean, where his family had been slave owners for many generations and very involved in the administration of that colony. And he himself was a slave owner. He was a part owner of a plantation with his brother-in-law, and he also had three domestic slaves, two of which were children. One was a 12-year-old boy named John, and one was a baby. And he was, when compensation was awarded, he was awarded for those people. He came to the Swan River and then oversaw justice for 16 years there, including many cases, of course, of Aboriginal people defending violent offence charges.
All right. Well, look, we'll leave people to go to the Australian Book Review to see more about people like Sir Henry Barclay in Victoria and Mary Broome, wife of the WA Governor Frederick Broome. Quite extraordinary, actually, to read this. Thank you very much indeed. More power to your arm.
Thanks so much, Geraldine.
Georgina Arnott, historian and postdoctoral research associate at Melbourne University.